Hello, and welcome to the Hub Systems Podcast, the voice of Man's Model Moments, the blog of the various ramblings on the modelling and gaming antics of my son and I. My name is Alex Mann, and with me is my son, Oscar.
Hello.
Also, as a special guest today, we have Anto from Icarus Miniatures.
Hello.
Before we start this episode, let's get on to what we've been up to in our spare time. So, Oscar, what have you been up to since we returned from holiday?
Everyone my age has just finished their GCSE results, so...
And you did very well.
I did very well. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
He has been rewarded.
Yeah. So we are thinking about our next levels of education, and I wanted to go to sixth form. I got the grades I needed, so I was busy doing summer work for my home, for the school. I went there, been there for 3 days now. And it's hard work. It's going to be difficult.
Welcome to almost the real world.
Yeah. I thought GCSEs were hard, and all they're telling me in every single lesson is, it's not like GCSE. You may have been able to wing it in GCSE. And I'm like, I didn't wing it.
That's what they tell at university as well.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And then when you start a job, it's like, right, well, now you've done the easy stuff. But what have you done gaming-wise?
Gaming-wise? We've been away from the whole kind of... actual gaming for the moment. I bought Dark Souls in sort of because of the Dark Souls board game that we saw, and that's almost as hard as sixth form, actually. The game, it's so difficult, you die so much. We also went to a D&D group. We're actually going to play D&D.
We did, yes. So for the first time for me for years. So I used to play first edition. That's how old I am. We've played one game of...
Which was kind of a little...
With your friends.
It was kind of like an eh game, wasn't it? It wasn't a proper one.
So I reached out. I don't know if you've seen, there's these meetups, a site where you can go and meet people of similar interests, whatever they be.
You're making it sound like a dating site.
Which isn't a dating site. Yeah, it's a non-sexually based meetup site. So you can put in, if I'm into hang gliding or flying or diving or whatever, and you can meet people in your area or create a group, if there isn't one, of like-minded people. So there's a couple of D&D groups on there that are close by. The kicker is with this, that you get a month free on this, and then you have to pay. So what people typically do is they'll advertise for a month and then get the group going, and then they'll never use the site again. So unfortunately, the group that I posted on was over a month old. But somebody did see the post and then started their own group, said, I've just moved to the area, looking to form group as well. So we've got a bunch of about 10 people.
And we
met them last week.
Yeah, we sort of did our characters. We went over some rules. And this Friday, tomorrow, we're actually going to go and do our first adventure.
I don't envy the Dungeon Master with a group of 10 people.
Well, that's actually me. So one of the things is I thought, oh, it'd be nice to play again. And then one of the things Tom, the guy who was sort of set up the group, said, would you be okay to DM? And I'm like, yeah, okay then. I used to DM back in the day, so I thought, well, why not? So, yeah, it's been fun getting that all together and getting back into it. But I'll come back to that when I come into my weekend. Well, my 2 weeks in hobby.
Okay.
So, Anto, you made a little appearance there, other than your initial introduction. So perhaps you could give yourself a little gamer bio, what you've been up to in the past few weeks.
Of course. Bio-wise, I started in the industry where pretty much everyone starts, with Games Workshop, with the old Lord of the Rings, Dion Gastini magazines.
Ah.
Like 15 years ago, I went into Tesco and my mum bought me one and bought a friend one. And then I've been obsessed with miniatures ever since. And then sort of 5 or 6 years ago decided, oh yeah, I could do this for a job without really thinking about it. And then now here we are. As for recent hobby things, I spend so much time running the businessy side of Icarus, I don't actually get to do a great deal of hobby stuff. It even got to the point where I haven't painted anything in probably a year. I just pay people to do it for me now.
Well, that's not a bad thing either. Okay, well, we'll come to Icarus Miniatures as the main topic of the show, and also the Kickstarter that you have coming shortly. Just to close this section off, as Oscar said, we started D&D. I realised, actually, we don't really have any D&D figures. We've got some that are kind of suitable.
We've got monsters and lots of them.
We've got big monsters, and we're not really... First level, if I put any of those on there, just one of them would just decimate the party. So I've been doing, fortunately, this is where 3D printing comes to the rescue. So I've been printing off a whole load of terrain, a load of figures and stuff. So they'll do until we can actually buy some figures that will arrive in time for the next sessions. So it's going to take a little bit of time to bolster the old D&D collection back to epic scale levels. So that's me, really. So it's been a fairly quiet couple of weeks. So next up, we've got our regular slot, Hit or Miss. And once again, it's been really slow the past couple of weeks. I think finally we're starting to get out of the summer lull.
Oh, but I love the summer lull.
It's so much nicer on the wallet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Not if you funded the Kickstarters we have. But let's start off with Forge World again, because they were
They're
the first people
favorite.
That... They are at the moment, aren't they? They sent us the nicest emails recently.
Yeah.
Pretty pictures. So Forge World sent a pretty picture email with the Titan Guards of the Adepticus Mechanicus. So these are guys who run around the bottom of Titans, fending off all the people who would shoot them down.
How many of them die a year?
I'm not sure that figure is recorded anywhere. So these come as upgrade sets rather than actual full kits. And they come in two different flavours. The Secutari Peltasts and the Secutari Hoplites. If that's not something to say after a couple of drinks, is it? Basically, these are, as I say, two upgrade sets. They come with backpacks, weapons, arms, and heads for the Peltasts. And for exactly the same price, you get the slightly more impressive Hoplites, who come with big shields, backpacks, heads, arms, and the actual, well, I don't know what you call them, heat spear lance things. So it just looks a bit more impressive. But as I say, for exactly the same price of £23.50. So, Anto, you mentioned you started off with Games Workshop. Were you ever been a 40k player?
I was. I started with Lord of the Rings, did that for a few years, and then 40k became my main game for many, many years.
It comes to us all, doesn't it?
Yeah. I must have played every army at some point to some degree.
What do you think of these, then?
I actually prefer the Peltasts. I don't know what it is, whether it's the paint job on the Hoplites, but there's something about the Hoplites that I just don't like, whereas the Peltasts remind me a little bit of the Death Court of Krieg, and I had a Death Court of Krieg army, and I've got a soft spot in my heart for them. So I prefer the Peltasts.
So it's actually difficult to see them, because they're only on the landing page, as far as I can see. Once you click through, you're just presented with the sort of pictures of the actual components, which is slightly odd, unless they're anywhere else that I've missed. But, I mean, as you would expect from Forge World, they're very nicely painted on the front page. They look like people who might guard Titans.
It's nice to see the scenic pictures of them on painted tables with things in the background. So I remember the last time I bought anything from Forge World, which was many years ago, they only had the unpainted pictures and one or two individually painted. There was never anything that gave you a sense of what they would look like on the battlefield. So I really enjoy those pictures.
Yeah, I think gaming companies in general seem to have got smarter, although there are some exceptions, which we will come to later. But Forge World, I think, definitely have
learned that. Forge World and games, they're getting really good at doing the whole presenting thing. Apart from, yeah. Do you remember the Age of Sigmar one, where they went over the top and put like every single model they owned on the table?
Yeah. Well, that was Games Workshop rather than Forge
World. Oh, yeah, Forge World have always done pretty well with these. I don't like how they're holding the spear things.
I think that's sort of meant to be like heat lance melter weapons or something.
They're holding them like sideways.
But yeah, I do agree that they're either very static, like there's a guy with it just holding it like it's a spear, or they're sort of holding it like they're about to stab something with it sideways, which is a bit odd.
Sideways.
I'm not really sure how I feel about these. I guess because we no longer play 40k. An upgrade set for £23.50 for, I guess it's 10 minis. So you're still going to need your 10 base minis to start with.
Yeah, it makes it an expensive unit.
It does. So when you actually go to the individual information bits, there are extra pictures, but the first one you're greeted with is the least interesting one, which is the components of the set, which is a rather bizarre way of doing it. And then the second picture is a nice little, you know, unit picture with them all individually. The last picture is sort of a close-up of one of them in that scenic sort of area as described before. Yeah, the Peltasts, as far as I can see, are kind of just, they've got some sort of plasma melter weapon. And apart from having funny helmets,
Oh, it looks like it's just heads, arms, and backpacks on the component sprue, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I guess the acid test is, and Ante, you're probably the best person to actually ask this, would you have bought them when you were playing 40K?
I may have bought the Peltasts, depending on whether I was into the Adeptus Mechanicus at the time. Probably wouldn't have bought the Hoplites, though. Because there's just some, it might be the way they're holding the spears, but there's just something about them that I don't like.
I tell you what I don't like about them, now looking at this closer, they're a lot like Necrons.
Yes.
Yeah, I can see that.
Those shields are very much like, I can't remember the unit, but there's
Pariahs, like that.
Yeah, where they've got the new version of
them. They had the scythes, didn't they?
Yeah, but they have these shields which look very much kind of like that, almost biomechanical kind of feel to them.
They look really, it's like the bulky, it just, they look like they shouldn't really be carrying the shield as well, like they can't handle both.
No.
A two-handed weapon and a huge shield is ambitious.
The others definitely look cooler.
Yeah.
But still, it again, it's the kind of, you're buying a load of heads and arms for £23.50.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it as a great value proposition.
It's sort of often the case with Forge World, though. I had a Red Scorpions army once upon a time, and I spent far too much money on the upgrade kits. So I know how it feels.
Well, if you're into it, and you're like simply going into the collecting of making one army fantastic.
Yeah, I think if you're an Adeptus Mechanicus player and you've got a big Titan and you think these are cool and want something to guard them with, you would probably, I mean, they'd fit very well, I guess. But if you're not, you'd probably think you must be mad spending 20 on a unit of 10, which isn't even a unit.
Which you need 3 or 4 to defend your Titan with.
Yes. Makes an expensive job defending really, really expensive Titan models.
The Titan models are cool, though.
Yeah. Okay, then. So, Oscar, hit or miss?
Purely because of what you're getting, and because you need the 10 minis before, it's going to be a miss.
Okay. Anto, what about you?
I'd give a miss to the Hoplites, but a hit to the Peltasks, because I do quite like the way they look.
The Hoplites don't get it anyway. Even if I said they were a hit, they're doomed. The Peltasts, unfortunately, I'm going to say miss, just because I couldn't bring myself to spend £23.50 because I know that this first picture has it all laid out. When you actually get it from Forge World, these are all going to be put in little bags and it's going to arrive through the post in a very small jiffy bag. And you're going to think, where's my stuff? And you're going to open it and think, oh yeah, it's all here. And you're going to spread it out in exactly this way to think, yeah. In fact, you could probably fit all of that on a £20 note. Which, yeah.
That's a sobering thought.
It is a sobering thought, and for that reason I'm out. So, for me, it's a miss. So
they do look cool, though.
I'm sorry, Forge World. They're kind of cool, but no.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on then to Games Workshop. Yay. And here we have a rather, I'll say inspirational, that's an ironic use of the word, Void Shield Generator. Which
certainly sounds interesting.
It's a bit of terrain. So how excited are we to see this, chaps?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear sums it up quite well, I think.
So this is a pretty ugly, well, piece of terrain.
Yeah. When I think of a void shield generator,
because a void shield sounds cool.
It sounds cool. It sounds like one of those things where you'd have all those rotating sort of discs within each other, spinning around in different directions.
You have rotating discs at the bottom here.
No, but I'm talking like, you know, if you have rings within each other.
I know what you mean, and I know what I'm seeing here. And they're not joining up. So it's a square-based, very gothic kind of 40K.
I'm expecting Frankenstein's monster to come out of the middle of that.
Yeah, and it does have kind of Van de Graaff generator kind of columns with little blue, they painted them blue, spheres on top, connected to a sort of central column. If I'm not describing it very well, it's because I'm not really prepared to put the effort in. Go to the website and have a look at it. It's £60. It is pretty big. I mean, if I show you there with Space Marines.
Oh, that is reasonably tall, actually.
Three, four, five, probably 6 or 7 times the height of a Space Marine. So it's a substantial structure. But for me, it's just damn ugly.
Yeah. It's too far on the gothic end of the scale. There's no way you could mistake it for anything other than a piece of 40K scenery, but in the worst possible way.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'll tell you, I'm just looking at another view of it here. What it looks like is, do you remember in Doctor Who, the reboot,
yeah,
when they had the new sonic screwdriver?
Oh my God.
It looks like
a bit like that,
they got,
yeah,
four sonic screwdrivers.
Four.
Stuck them on top of. So, yeah. The other thing I don't like about it is those sonic screwdrivery bits. I mean, although it looks like they've got the obligatory skulls on them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, they don't kind of go. The architecture is slightly different. The design of them is slightly different from the rest of it. They sort of stick out.
Yeah.
They're almost Geiger-esque.
It's funny because half of it's kind of steampunk, and then you've got these weird kind of cathedral spiry bits at the top of the screwdriver.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mix.
No, I think it's a truly horrible construction.
It's an odd-looking beast.
Yeah, and I wouldn't ever pay. Well, I wouldn't ever pay for it, but I certainly wouldn't ever pay £60 for it.
No.
£60 is a lot of money to spend on a piece of terrain, I feel. Especially when I was looking at, I think it's a site, I can't remember what it's called now, something like Dark Cities or something like this. MDF terrain made for 10, 15, 28 millimeter. They do some fantastic things. And I think their skyscrapers for sort of 10, 15 mil are like 20, 25 pounds. They do bundles for £60, you know, which is, and they're much bigger than this individually. Yeah. And I think you get two or three for that sort of price. So, and yes, it's MDF laser cut and not with the rejection molded detail here. But again, for a piece of terrain, am I that concerned?
I really like how MDF terrain has come on in the last few years. It's gone from a lot of it being really basic box shapes, and a lot of the companies are doing some really interesting looking stuff with it now.
Yeah.
Which I do really like.
There is that one website which they do that terrain, and then they do lighting systems and electronics and all of them, so you get working windmills and stuff.
Yeah,
right. Wargaming Model Mods. That's the name of the company. I think it was on Kickstarter last year.
Yeah, they were.
Does awesome stuff. I've got one of his buildings sitting on top of my display cabinet. Oh,
brilliant.
I've just found the website, actually. Dark Zone, it's called, from Dark Ops.
That's cool.
And, yeah, they've got hexagonal buildings here, £25. Gets you a 2 and 1 double hex skyscraper sort of arrangement. And it looks pretty cool. It looks like, you know, future.
That does look awesome.
In fact, slightly, only just in the future, kind of terrain. It looks pretty good. £25. Okay, that's a 10mm one, but it's still pretty big.
Yeah, it still looks like it's a fair size.
You have a 10mm Dark Zone Industrial Dual Generator, which to me looks a lot better than that Void Shield Generator.
That could be a Void Shield Generator.
you know, and it's £12. And actually, would you tell that's MDF? I'm not sure you would. It certainly doesn't look it when it's all painted up there. They also do 28mm and stuff as well. But, I mean, the shape, you're talking about the shapes there. And so, I mean, you've got this.
Those are so pretty.
Sankaki Exchange. You know, it's got a lot of different angles and stuff there. There's another one. I think it's called the Blade or the Edge or something. Here we go, the Blade.
Ooh, I'm going to spend so much money.
You know, they do ships, they do 28mm stuff.
Oh, look, a Dark Fi warp gate.
Yep, they do a kind of sort of mini Stargate, even with the ramp in 28mm, £10. Yeah. Again, it's kind of about value and what it's adding to the game. And I don't feel that the Void Shield Generator is adding to my game. Bearing in mind that I've got to make it and paint it, and painting it is going to take I don't want to say what it's going to be like.
I've just seen, if you look at there's a view from the top of the Void Shield Generator with a massive skull, like picture from the top. So the enemy planes, before they bomb the hell out of this ugly thing, can see.
Yeah. We got the right target? Yep, that's the one.
It's like it is just a target, put a skull in the middle of it.
The Adeptus Mechanicus are far more concerned with branding than they are with security.
Yeah, well, marketing won out over security, definitely. No, it must say Adeptus Mechanicus in the largest letters we have.
And four skulls.
It should be identifiable from orbit.
skulls everywhere.
Yeah.
Skulls.
Yeah, it has quite a lot of skulls on this, it must be said. I mean, we've had some models recently where the skull count has been low.
Really? Yeah, actually, so they're making up for it.
It's definitely making up for it. They've restrained themselves for too long, and they just said, right, go wild. Do whatever you want.
They had to make some abomination.
So, it's... do we need to have a vote?
No.
I don't think
miss.
So.
Miss. Miss. Miss, yeah. Okay. So, sorry, Games Workshop. You were coming...
No, we're not sorry. Well. We're not sorry with this one.
Yeah, the last couple of weeks, they've been doing well.
Yeah.
They've almost made it. They've just let themselves down.
They went cold turkey because they just didn't have enough skulls.
Okay, so next we go to Spartan Games, and there are a whole bunch of releases here for Halo Ground Command.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we have 4 releases for the Covenant, and only 2 for the UNSC, which is how it should be, in my opinion.
Yep.
Now, 2 of these are really kind of the same thing, they're iterations of the same thing, because we have the Covenant Vanguard Ghosts and the Covenant Scout Ghosts, which, funnily enough, are both ghosts.
I'm assuming it's just grunts and elites.
Yeah, the Vanguard are the mini elites, and the Scouts are basically the grunts. Now, the unfortunate thing, we were talking before about how Forge World were pining the rain, showcasing their models. Spartan, listen up. You need to do more.
Yeah, because
these are just renders. We know they have the models. We've seen the models. The models have been touted around the world. They could have taken some photos of the models.
They look fantastic.
Because they look great. These renders really don't show how good they look. In fact, the renders look pretty dull. You know, you get a single 2/3 view from the front of all 6, and then you get a larger one 2/3 from the rear, which gives you a bit more detail, but again, it doesn't really show you. And yes, we know what ghosts look like, but we want to see what the minis look like.
Yeah. If they didn't already have the physical models that they'd been showing around at conventions and stuff, I would give them a bit of slack. Because before you have the physical models, it can be really hard to show anything.
But yes.
Once you've got them, just even a mobile phone can take good enough pictures for people to get an idea.
And we know that Spartan takes good pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, if we look at some of their recent releases, and in fact, if we go to their homepage with their little scrolling banner, interestingly enough, it doesn't mention at all the new releases on the main Spartan Games webpage. You actually have to go to the shop to find it. But the main page has lovely pictures of their Firestorm releases, the Zelosians, the Syndicate, which are absolutely gorgeous.
Those are pretty.
The Elosians, they're good.
The Zelosians, well, they're the wrong side of the war, but...
Oh, no, you wish they were on the other side of the war.
So, come on, Spartan, get your act together. We need some pictures. More pictures. Now, aside from that, there is a slight difference in the two sets of models, in that the Vanguards are £30, and the Scouts, I believe, are £28. So, Grunts are cheaper. Even though it looks like the Grunts are slightly bigger.
I think it's...
Maybe they're more complicated.
They're a little less. They're more towards the end of the ghost.
Yes, I guess. So £30 or £28 is buying you 6 minis. What do we think, guys? Anto, have you seen the Ground Command?
It's a hit from me purely because I love Halo. I love it so much. So they can do no wrong. As long as they keep releasing Halo stuff, it's always going to be hits.
Have you actually had a chance to see Halo Ground Command in the flesh?
Not in the flesh, no. But I'm hoping to a convention next month, hopefully, which will be good.
It looks really, really good.
Really, really nice.
We've had some previews of them, and now that they're out, you know, you can talk about them. It all looks really nice. The Scorpion's really nice as well.
I think out of everything, my favourites are just the Hunters.
Now we come on to that.
Oh,
so,
sorry.
Here's all for these, Oscar.
Like Anto said, it's Halo.
Yeah. But
more pictures, yeah, that's...
I think they're hits. They are really good, but...
I'm just going to say, the elites are going to get serious backache doing that every day, aren't they?
Well, they kind of have a curved spine.
It's going to hurt their neck, though. You think it hurts to, you know, lean over a desk or something all day? Ow.
Yeah, but they do have extra joints, so...
Do they? Oh, well...
Yeah. Okay, so a hit for the ghosts. Let's move on to the Hunters, which are, I must say, my favourite models.
Yeah,
I don't know, the elites are also very nice. But again, just renders. Guys, you've got these models. Show them. Show
the
beauty.
They look so good in the flesh, in the actual...
Yeah. I mean, the Hunters are one of my favourites in the game.
when you met them.
No, they're beasts, and they're exactly the same, you know, in Halo Grand Command. They're £26 for four. I'll raise this pricing thing again when we come to the Warthogs, because it has been popping around a little bit on Facebook and the forums about this. What do we think? £26. These are 15mm miniatures, so they are about £650 each. I can't do maths. I've had half an Amigos, so I should be able to do more basic maths than that.
The price doesn't really bother me. I think once you've gone on the other side and taken part in the production of things, within reason, price is never really a problem because you appreciate how much goes into everything. And tabletop wargaming in general is an expensive hobby, so it's all on a bell curve anyway. Just throw my money at the screen.
Oscar, what about you?
Oh, definitely. Hunters are awesome. They're awesome. I don't know what else there is really to say about it. I mean, again, more pictures, but we've already said that. The poses of both of the poses, the two different poses, are very dynamic. They always do that very well. Things.
They've captured the hunter really well, I think.
Yeah, the way they move around with the shield covering them. Yeah, it's a hit.
Yeah, I think I would agree too. £26 might make me think twice, but it wouldn't stop me buying them. So I think it's a hit for me too. Which then gives us the final Covenant release, which is the Covenant Scenery Box. And this gives you a whole bunch of stuff that if you know Halo, you will recognize, because it's all the stuff that you end up smashing into in Warthogs or upending your Warthog on when you're trying to crush an elite who keeps jumping out of your way.
Pretty much that is the only time you meet scenery.
Yeah. So it's a pretty nice pack. Again, we've seen this in reality. So Spartan, please, please, please put some pictures, not renders.
Yeah, because they look so good on the battlefield. It is like you are playing the game.
Yeah, and I think if you had this as models on the scenery board with some elites and grunts and stuff, exactly like you said, Anto, with the Titan behind it, you could put the Scorpion tank behind it or the landers or whatever. And it would be really cool.
Now, I haven't actually seen
this. Is a bit bland.
No, yeah, that's true. Look, they've added the shields, round shields.
Yeah, they've got the shields.
Which is fantastic.
They've got the transmitter tower, they've got the drop pods, and what do you get? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Well, hang on. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So you get 20 pieces in this box, and it's £22. They're all resin. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Also, it contains 19 assorted. I've added an extra one somehow. Oh, yes, because an extra shield there. But 19 pieces of scenery for £22, all cast in resin.
Very high quality is reasonable, yeah.
It would probably be one of the first things I would buy, because the scenery packs immediately place the game in the universe. When you put them on the table, you are in the Halo universe. And it's a very easy way to improve the immersion for your game. So it's probably one of the first things I would buy.
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay, so then let's have a look at the other scenery pack, which, of course, is for the UNSC. And the UNSC, of course, not being as high-tech, have some boxes.
Hoorah!
And some shields, you know.
And the gun racks.
And the gun racks, yeah. So it's possibly not quite as an exciting scenery box from my
point of view. But it still immerses you in the universe.
But it still immerses you in the universe, yeah.
It makes me think much more of playing Halo Forge and building maps. The UNSC box does than the Covenant.
Oh no, that was fun. I mean, me and my friends did that, but we didn't try and build maps. We just got this thing called the Death Ball, which is basically a sun, and you fly around with it and kill each other. And you're getting 20 pieces of scenery.
You get 24. Sorry. Oh no. So, Spartan, the UNSC scenery box contains 24 assorted Covenant scenery pieces.
There's something not quite right here.
Yes. I think they meant UNSC. So, yes, we need a little bit of an editor on that, on the old website. Has to say, Spartan Strength is not in its promotional materials and website.
No, it is definitely in creating resin.
It is. So.
But again, 24 pieces for £22 is very reasonable again.
Yeah, if you saw them in a box and they were £1 a piece, you'd probably pick up a little bit. So yeah, I think that's it as well.
Yes, yeah,
which brings us to possibly the most controversial of the...
Definitely, yeah.
I don't know what you call them, upgrade boxes or additional boxes, because these are all existing things that come in the two-player starter set. Warthogs. So here we have two warthogs with various different options for the turrets. So you get the missile turrets, the Gauss turrets, the Gatling gun turrets for £27.
And you get two.
For two 15mm warthogs. It has been bouncing around on Facebook quite a lot that people have bought the two-player box set looking for a couple more warthogs, seen this and then gone, oh. And it's killed their enthusiasm for the game.
Because that is about £13 or more for...
It's £13.5. And basically, you do get all of these turret options.
Which is good. I like the availability.
Saying, well, I would rather not have...
the turrets and have another warp.
For turrets that I didn't want. I'll be able to buy them later or something. So it's a difficult one because, you know, they've given you all of the options. But £27 for two little warthogs... If that douses the enthusiasm that people have, I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think they might have been better off releasing separate sets where you get a warthog with a chain gun, a warthog with the missile pod, a warthog with the Gauss cannon, instead of bundling all the turrets together so you just get them all, which is nice because it gives you all the options, but it does increase the price.
Yeah, well, it's especially odd for me because the two-player ground set, if you go to something like Element Games or Wayland or whatever and get the full set, it's £58. Well, plus shipping, so you talk about £61. So essentially you could buy another starter box, sell the Covenant half, and you've got much more than just the two warhogs. Now, you don't get all the turret options there, so the only way to get some of the turret options, I believe, is through the...
But the turret options would just be sitting around anyway, because you'd only be using two.
So there's a rub, isn't it? And I was kind of going to mention this before, but I'll mention it now, with the ghosts, because actually, one of the reasons I'm not sure I would commit here is, do I want to buy six scout ghosts and then buy six vanguard ghosts? Am I going to use 12 ghosts? Or would it have been better to have a single box with three of each?
Yeah, it's...
So, I'm not sure. I don't know what the answer is. But I'm not sure on the warthogs. People have mentioned, oh, it's because it's, you know, it's Halo, so it has an existing IP, so there has to be licensing, all that kind of stuff. But you're getting six ghosts for the same sort of price, but you're only getting two hogs. Either that, or Spartan Games just doesn't like the UNSC.
Yeah, they are. What is this?
They've chosen their side, and it's the right one, the Covenant, obviously.
The only other thing I can think of is that the Warthog is an inherently more difficult piece to cast, because you've got the wheels and the axles and the separate turret. So if it's more labour-intensive for them to make, that might
be part of
the reason.
It contains more pewter. And obviously the price of tin in the past 5 years or so has gone through the absolute roof. But then again, that's going to be concentrated in these turret upgrades. So you're kind of coming back to that original premise of...
Yeah.
Maybe the warthog should be separate and the turret option should be separate or something like that.
Yeah, so you could buy the turret option.
Yeah, like Backhunter said, you know, have a warthog of each different turret type.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a bit of an odd one, that. So what do we think?
I'm still going to give it a hit because it's Halo and warthogs, and I want to drive them across the battlefield making warthog noises. But I think they could have packaged them better for the customer, but I'd still throw my money at it.
Do you think there's rules for your warthog flying over a piece of scenery and crushing a couple of grunts?
There are rules for driving your warthog into grunts.
And then you just getting out, flipping the warthog back over, and then getting back in.
Pull that in.
Oh, brilliant.
Release a special rubber version of the warthog mini that you can throw across the table.
So what do you reckon, Oscar?
The model, like, aesthetically, it's a hit. It's fantastic, you know.
But this is specifically the Warthog box, right? Because the Warthog already exists in the two-player box.
So okay, you're going to be annoying on me.
Of course I am.
Okay, yeah. Well, it is Halo. You do... The availability of Spartan is always very good. They always give you all of the options.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay, then. You go
I'm
first.
I'm going to say it's a miss.
Firmly
because... Here is the list of stuff in the starter box, which you can get. Okay, the RRP is only £65. So if you buy it from Spartan, it's £65, which is only slightly more than twice of the Warthog box. Okay, inside of which you get the command base, which is one officer, one medic, a radio, two trooper units, each with three troopers on each, a heavy machine gun base, which has an HMG, a gunner, a spotter, fire support unit with two trooper bases, two rocket team bases, three Spartan bases, two warthogs. Also, you get all the Covenant stuff, and you get all of the tokens, the rules, all of the stat sheets, reference sheet, dice, templates for the UNSC Pelican and Covenant Phantom, and scenery.
See, that is what...
So, like, why would I buy the Warthogs by themselves?
Because the Spartans' two-player box sets have always been very good and always packed full of stuff and always been very reasonable in price for what they contain. And it's just weird seeing that in perspective, really, about how much you really get and why they've released it in this way.
Yeah. I mean, I would just buy two starter sets and...
Well, with this new light, I'm very displeased to say that just because why they've released it like this, it is a miss. And...
Because basically you know what, you're paying for the missile turret and the Gauss turret. That's the only extra bits that you get.
Yeah, and to be fair, if you want to buy more Warhawks, just get all of the Halo, you know, just get double your Halo.
So I do expect to see on eBay these individual Gauss and missile turrets going for ridiculous amounts of money.
Yes.
As individual items.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
I won't do it because I won't buy the box, but... So, Oscar, you've got the casting vote now.
I just said the casting vote, Dad.
Did you? I missed it. What was it?
It was a miss. Were you listening to anything I said?
Not at all. Okay. So, I just didn't want to hear it, you see.
Ah, I see.
That's
yeah.
what it was. So, we have not quite a clean sweep of hits there from Spartan. We got a little hung up on the Warthogs, but...
That was mainly because of how they were sold.
Hits across the other range. Warthogs, we just feel... And again, for the whole of it, I would say the packaging is maybe needs a little bit of looking at. For me as well, it's the presentation. Spartan needs to really get onto their website. They need a new website. And product presentation is just, they need product presentation. Okay, so our final release for Hit or Miss comes from Fantasy Flight Games, X-Wing. And it's another one of these, like, I'll show you the dark side. This is Go Rogue, and it introduces the U-Wing and the TIE Striker. So, the U-Wing expansion pack is a ship that I don't recognise, but it kind of looks like, and I am old enough to have seen this, Buck Rogers in the 21st century. That looks like his starfighter combined with an X-Wing. It looks like they crashed together and kind of formed all the strange love child of the two.
The cockpit of it very much reminds me of the Snowspeeder from Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it does actually.
In the design of the actual class part of the cockpit.
It's kind of like, it's like a Snowspeeder with an X-Wing sort of in go fast mode.
Am I right in saying that those two large wings fold to the front and then fold back?
Looks like they fold to the front.
Now that is cool. If it is a...
That is cool.
Ooh.
I like that.
I mean, it does look like a nice ship, doesn't it?
It does.
It looks cool. I mean, I've never seen it before. I don't know it, but it does look cool. And the TIE Striker is just cool.
TIEs are almost always cool.
Yeah. And this looks like a sort of a bat version.
If
Batman was on the dark side, which he probably is, this is what he would fly.
They kind of, in a way, both are. So in a way, it should just be like the Batman Star Wars expansion kit.
Yeah, probably should be.
Batman should be a pilot card on each of these.
So, I mean, this is a typical Fantasy Flight Games 6 to 9 months in advance release.
That they do perfectly with everything that you could possibly need to know.
Yep, and it goes through... The actual ships, it's got a little bit of fluff, showing them with the prior I'll Show You the Dark Side release, just to show that, we did these as well in case you missed them. Then it's got all the contents of what you get with the ships. Then it talks a little bit about tactics. So, what do we think about the U-Wing to start with?
I really like it. It looks like the love child of two of my favourite ships, and that's exactly what I wanted, even though I didn't know it.
It looks like it's on a large base as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. And is it because of just those two really sticky arty bits?
Yeah.
I described that very badly. I really, really like it. I have never seen it in the Star Wars universe before, but they tend to have quite a lot of ships that we've never seen.
And if this is...
I think it's...
It's probably in the universe, isn't it?
I think it's from the new film. I think it's the one that they predominantly fly around. And I think it's bigger because they can all fit inside it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it says later this year, those of us at Fantasy Flight Games will join the millions of Star Wars fans lining up to watch Rogue One.
Oh, then I like it even more already.
Like you, we are eager to learn more about Jyn Erso, to discover what role she plays in the fledgling Rebel Alliance, and to see if she will help the Rebellion gain valuable intelligence on the Galactic Empire's newest weapons. I bet she does.
Really?
I bet she gets the plans.
Serious?
Spoilers.
And we also look forward to seeing the film's new starships in action. So,
oh, so they're both in the new film.
So we have canon, which is good.
Ooh.
It's one of our primary dislikes for some of the ships in Fantasy's releases. Mm-hmm. No, I think it's a very cool ship. Like you say, I didn't know I wanted it, and it's a Rebel ship, so I don't. But again, I kind of do.
Can't deny it.
It's nice. And the TIE Striker, I mean, it's a hit from me straight away, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's very, very cool.
Yeah.
I can tell it's going to be a pain in the arse in the game as well. There you go. Although the ability may seem unnecessary.
Straight to it first glance, it's important to remember that you do not need to equip your TIE Striker with adaptive aerolons. Ooh. I have no idea what that means.
It goes fast. Yeah. Is what I'm going to assume.
Oh, I think it probably does. Yeah, clean sweep there on the Go Rogue announcement. We can't call it a release because, as always, Fantasy Flight announced their things so far in advance. The film will be out and gathering dust on our DVD shelf by the time this actually hits stores. But no, good clean sweep there. Which takes us nicely onto the main topic, which comes back to one of our favourite things, which is, of course, Kickstarter. Now, we saw the original Kickstarter for Icarus Miniatures, and we were very excited and reliably informed that that was about a year ago. And then we were very disappointed when it wasn't funded, and it was, in fact, cancelled prior to finishing. However, that wasn't the end for Icarus Miniatures, because they're back, and this time we don't just have artwork and renders for the minis, we have actual product, and must say they look absolutely gorgeous. So let's not delay, but ask our guest to tell us all about Icarus and their upcoming Kickstarter. So, Anto, could you introduce all of your history of Icarus Miniatures and the Kickstarter you've got coming up soon?
I certainly can. Like you said, we went on Kickstarter about this time last year, just last September, hoping to raise, £30,000. It didn't come anywhere close, and it was clear that the project wasn't going to fund, so I chose to cancel it. There were two main reasons, I think, that it didn't fund. The first was that we were up against some really stiff competition. Like 4 or 5 huge companies released Kickstarters around the same time, which bled off a lot of backers. And second, throwing back to what you were saying about Spartan before, the presentation was just not there. We had one physical model that people could buy, which was Gabriel Cross, and we had a couple of renders, and then the rest was just artwork. So people just couldn't get a good enough sense of what they were going to be getting.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big part of it. Whereas this time we're going with a much lower goal. It'll only be 5,000, and there's pretty painted miniatures for everyone to look at, which will hopefully make a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, we were convinced of the layout. I must say, for me, primarily because of the aliens.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
They reminded me of
the Chimera.
The Chimera off the game Resistance.
Yeah, definitely. But actually, now you've got the minis, and you can actually see these, and they are, I mean, firstly, they've got great posing, they've got great motion. Secondly, they look like they're beautifully cast. And thirdly, I don't know who your painter is, but oh my lord.
He's a god.
His name's Gustavo Munoz. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but he is crazy talented.
Yeah.
It's insane. Every time he sends me an update with a work in progress, I'm convinced he's a wizard.
Yeah.
Magic is it's the only thing that would explain it. He must be a wizard. He makes some sort of dark sacrifice, and this is what we end up with. And I'm okay with that.
Well, whatever it takes.
Keep him coming. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking on the Facebook page actually, which gives some sort of close-ups of some of the minis. And I mean, yes, the painting's great, but the painting brings out the detail that is sculpted on these minis.
There's details on a lot of the models I didn't even know were there. They were painted, and I spent months looking at renders and physical casts, But then when I see the painted versions on almost every model, I would notice something and think, I didn't realize that was on the model. And I'd pull one out of one of the drawers and be like, it was on the model. Good job.
So tell us a little bit about the Icarus project then. What are the, what's the background and the factions within it?
So it's sci-fi. It's got aliens for anyone that didn't realize. And it's set hundreds of years in the future, and it, the present day of the universe, if you like, is a few years after a giant galactic war where the Nexus, who are the four-armed aliens that are going to be on the Kickstarter, basically they want to destroy all of humanity because they resent how prominent humanity is on the galactic stage, if you like. So they want to get rid of them.
Galactic jealousy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
They were angry that the Alliance, the Galactic Alliance of Humanity had come along and they were getting all the attention and all the toys. So they decided they'd start a galactic war over it. And it's the second one they've started. They really, they can't let it go. They, they just can't deal with the fact that humans are a thing. So they started a war and they lost. And in the present day of the game, the Nexus have almost turned into space pirates. Their empire is broken, but they've got lots of little pockets all over the galaxy, and they spend their time raiding and pillaging just various places, various human settlements all over the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, how can humans be dominant? They've only got two arms.
Exactly. More arms is more power.
Absolutely. So your human faction, we've got the, I'm just looking at a couple of pictures of the model of the Alliance Outrider, because I particularly like him.
Yes. The Outrider is probably my favourite human model so far. They are scouts, which is why they're cloaked and slightly different looking to everything else. And they tend to operate ahead of everyone else and get some of the better equipment, which is why the model gets the fancy sniper rifle, where everyone else only gets assault rifles, because they get the best equipment for their role.
So tell us a little bit about the Alliance then.
So the Alliance is the overall governing body of humanity. It's, there are small independent human settlements, but it's the Alliance that's responsible for humanity as a whole. They make all the laws. They, most importantly, defend them against the Nexus and any other aliens that want to crush them. They're very utilitarian. Everything is fit for purpose. They don't make things that are so much pretty as serve their purpose. So everything's grey and a little bit dystopian. It's not a wonderful life in the Alliance for a lot of people, because all their money and all their taxes go to keep the war effort going.
So you describe on the Kickstarter the models as being 35mm scale?
Yeah.
But you actually have a picture nicely comparing them actually with GW, Corvus Belli, Mantic, and broadly they're pretty much the same size. So which is about 1/48 scale, which,
yep.
If people didn't realize, is about what 28mm traditionally referred to as, or 32mm, and as you say, actually 35mm high, which is, yeah, where you're measuring from, are.
Scale in the wargaming industry is something that has always bugged me, because 28mm is the umbrella term,
yep,
for something that hasn't actually been that size in decades. If you measure a Space Marine, like the Legion of the Damned model that's on the comparison picture, you measure it and it's about 38mm tall.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time since anything's actually been 28, but it's still the umbrella term. So a lot of what people think are 28mm games, Icarus Miniatures products will fit with, but they're actually more aligned with 35 to the eye or 38 to the top of the head, 1/48 scale. Almost exactly for a 6-foot human is what they would fit in. So if you're looking for terrain, get 1/48 scale stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us about the game itself.
So the game itself is a skirmish game, low model count. And the whole idea behind it is to try and create as a cinematic experience as possible. So I want it to beyond the tabletop what it's like watching a really good action film with explosions and people throwing grenades into the top floor of a building and the explosions throwing someone out of a window and then fall into their death and people jumping across chasms and pushing people over edges, all of which are things that you can do in the game.
Brilliant.
The basic rules are intentionally really simple. You can pick up the rule book and almost everything you need to know about a model is in its stat line. There are no tables for working out who wins in a combat. It just tells you on the stat line, this is what you need to roll to hit someone in the face with your giant axe, and this is what you need to roll to shoot someone. Because I wanted it to be easy to pick up, because one of the problems I find is that there are so many games out on the market, it's really hard to get into all the games.
Yeah.
Because there's huge rule books that you've got to read, and each one's slightly different, and some of them are very, very, very thick. So I wanted something that anyone that was familiar with wargaming could pick up the rule book, flip through it once, and be able to play a game, and then start enjoying the more interesting aspects of the special rules and the equipment and things like that.
Yeah. Okay, so again, just looking through the Kickstarter, and actually I'm going to go back to the Facebook pictures purely because they're huge. So again, just looking through some of the minis, and now to the looking at the Nexus. So we've got a picture of the Feral Nexus here. Do you know, actually it's slightly dissuading me from funding this now, because my God, I'm never going to be able to paint that in my mind.
I know exactly how you feel. That's one of the reasons I've not painted in like a year. As soon as I saw the very first piece that Gustavo did, I was like, yeah, that's it. I'm never painting again. You can just paint everything that we release from now on, and I'm never even going to pick up a brush.
Well, these Feral Nexuses, they are pretty, intimidating.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty nasty looking.
The poses that they're in are very, very cinematic. Like the one where he's lunging forward with the two blades.
Yeah.
I enjoy the Nexus. Fun fact, they have a rule in their profile that occasionally they will stop and eat their victims, and they can regain health.
Nice.
Because in the background, centuries ago, the Nexus that eventually became the Feral Nexus were outcast onto one of the moons of the Nexus home planet and then sort of embargoed and just left there. And over time, they reverted back to the old ways of just being forest-dwelling tribes that just kill each other all the time. So when the current leader of the Nexus, General Varrakos, when he took over, he went there, gathered them all up, shackled them, and carries them in giant slave-like ships all chained up so they can't murder each other. And then when they get to a battlefield, just unlocks the chains, gives them a pistol, and pushes them out the door and says, go on, have fun. Do whatever.
But you do, of course, have some slightly more sophisticated Nexus, because we're just looking now at a picture of the Nexus Assassin.
Which I have to say, I've looked through all of these pictures, and it is probably one of my favourite models.
It's a beauty. It's also one of the best painted models I've ever seen.
It's fantastic.
So good. When I opened the attachment with the picture from Gustavo for it, I just sat in silence for a few minutes, just mouth agape, looking at it. I was like, that exceeded every one of my expectations.
Yeah, I mean, his ability to pick out lighting effects is quite astonishing.
He's a wizard. That's the only way to describe it. But the Assassin is one of the more technologically advanced units, if you like. As a whole, the Nexus as a race are quite suspicious of technology. They're a very ancient and tribal, and close combat is their thing. But Varrakos, their leader, recognizes that he's not going to be able to compete with the various different technologically advanced races in the galaxy without some of their own technology. So the Assassins sort of stand apart to the rest of the Nexus. They're quite distrusted, and none of the other Nexus really like them, but they appreciate how effective they are at killing. So they sort of let them come along, because they might not agree with the method, but they agree with the results. The many, many, many dead bodies.
I like the way he's there holding his rifle. And then his two little arms. He's also got the two blades.
Yeah, he's got two blades. Most of the Nexus seem to be carrying at least two blades.
Always got to be ready for a fight.
Yeah.
Don't want someone coming up behind you that you can't shank with your blades.
Yeah, so we're looking at the Nexus Brawler now, who's got a great big... Is that an axe? Yep, it's a big axe and two blades.
So the Nexus Brawler in the background, before they became part of the Nexus Army... On their home planet, to pass the time, they fight each other in giant gladiator-style combat. And the Brawlers are the best of the best of these gladiator-esque fighters. And they will be recruited by the army, given the biggest weapons and the toughest armors, and again, pushed out the door and say, go chop off some heads. More power to you.
I'm not sure how you would fight somebody with three weapons.
You can't.
It'd be very difficult to defend yourself with only one weapon against all those arms.
Yeah, yeah. And is that reflected in their stats, in the way they play?
Yes, they are very close combat oriented. The Brawler in particular has a lot of attacks. And likely in the next version, they're going to get even more weighted for close combat. To encourage people to use them and get across the board and chop people up with them.
Yeah, because and I noticed one of the things, and I think it's a great thing to have as well. One is that you've got the beta rules, so you can download PDF.
Yep.
Actually try the game. And you've also got a battle report, playtesting the rules as well.
Yeah, the guys over on the Daily Dial, which is a YouTube channel from Canada, they've been really good. They've played a bunch of games of Icarus Project of different versions, and they've been really helpful in the playtesting process. Because most of the things with the company is just me on my own. I do all the rules writing, and a lot of the playtesting is me running through scenarios on my own. It can be quite difficult. I can almost, if you like, be too close to it to see some of the errors. So having other people play, and particularly other people that record themselves so I can watch it back, has been really useful, because they somehow get into every situation that I've not written a rule for. So every version of a bike veering off in a certain way, and how does it affect this? They just seem to find it, which is amazing.
It's always the way, isn't it? You can never just have the basic rules. It's like, well, can I try doing this? It's like, yeah, sure. Just let me write a rule for that.
Yeah. There's been very few situations where I've been playtesting the game with anyone where they've said, can I do this? And I've said, no. It's always been, that is awesome. Give me 5 minutes to write a rule for it. And then refine it over time. One of my favorite rules is firing into a close combat with the chance to murder one of your own models.
Yeah, I never understood why. I guess 40K, you never could you?
No.
It's the resolution of trying to work out who gets hit is a little bit annoying to work out from the design point of view. But once you've got it, then you have the chance to, for, say, an Alliance model to shoot into a combat with an Alliance model and a Nexus model, accidentally hit the Alliance model and kill them, and then that trigger a nearby model to take a morale check, fail it because they've just watched their friend's brains get blown out by one of their own guys, and then run off the battlefield. And it's just moments like that are just what I love so much about the game.
Well, and that to me is always, you know, you should have the option to be able to. It's like, well, nobody would fire into a close combat. It's just stupid. It's like, well, actually, I know some people that if they were given a gun, probably would. Plus, you've seen it in films. It's just like, well, why can't I do this?
And, like, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, we're always, when you're playing these, I know this isn't tabletop gaming, but on online gaming, whenever you're playing a game, like, for example, Modern Warfare or something, you know, you can go in guns blazing, you won't hurt a single one of your enemies or something. It's not realistic. But I always do, like, whenever we're playing a game, it's always more fun to have the risk-taking of, I could just make this go very badly for myself.
Yeah. I remember when, and this is going a long, long way back when I was your age, I used to play Car Wars. You know, we played Car Wars.
Oh, we played, that's great.
And the great thing about Car Wars is you can, at the very first time I played it, you can do anything. So you make your car. I had a rocket launcher in it and did everything. It's like, start, right. So I just accelerated 60 miles an hour, and then I just turned. And of course, because I didn't know anything about it, I just did a 90 degree turn. It's just like, okay, yes, you can do that. It's just like a levels, whatever difficulty it is. Failed miserably, basically turned my car over it, burst into flames, all the rockets exploded, I was dead in seconds. So
that's what you're on.
But I've remembered it over 30 years. So,
exactly.
You know, those kind of, as you say, those cinematic moments that you make nights awesome. That you go, do you remember when Alex just did this?
Yeah, exactly.
And then spent the rest of your rest of the game watching.
Yep.
You know, they do make it.
I think one of the gaming memories that sticks in my head strongest is back in third edition of 40K, me and some friends had decked out the Space Hulk, the old Space Hulk tiles, and were playing a game on that. And someone threw a grenade. I can't even remember whether throwing grenades was part of the rules or whether we just decided it should be because it was cool. But they threw a grenade and it exploded. And someone said, surely that should rip a hole in the side of the ship and everyone should get sucked into space. So we're like, yes, of course it should, because it's awesome. So we quickly fluffed up some rules for it, and that's how we played the rest of the game. Most of the kills came from blowing holes in the side of the ship. And that's the sort of environment I want, where people can do things like that and watch the hilarious things ensue.
Excellent. Okay, so just taking a look at some of the other models now, because at the end of the day, we're model fetishists as well.
Yeah.
So we have the Gunslinger, who is a pretty imposing character.
Yes, indeed. In the background, the Gunslinger is an Alliance detective. So the Alliance's police are called Marshals, and they are pretty much the worst version of current-day police that you can imagine. There's a lot of police crime and police brutality, and people don't trust them for very good reason. But because they're so barbaric, they can come in quite handy in a fight if you happen to get invaded. And the Gunslinger is a detective of theirs, and he roams the galaxy looking for the most dangerous criminals, the people that no one else can find or no one else wants to find. And he hates people. He really doesn't like working with anyone. So in the rules, he's got a rule called loner, which means that as long as he's 18 inches or more away from someone else, he performs much better. Because he just does much better when he's not surrounded by incompetence.
Excellent.
So as long as he's not around people, he is much better.
So he kind of looks a bit like a kind of trooper crossed with a cowboy with a little bit of Blade Runner thrown in there.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the painting on his leather jacket is like you've actually just got a tiny leather jacket and put it on him. It looks so amazing.
Real good. He was one of the first Alliance characters that I wrote background for. Way, way back, because the actual universe started as stories that I used to write in university, and he was one of the early characters, and I just really liked the idea of him in armor, but then with a duster over it and a cowboy hat, because it makes a really cool silhouette against the night sky as he's walking through the seedy parts of the city looking for the criminals.
So we've also got some troopers. So we've got a basic Alliance trooper. Am I right in saying you've got different heads for these guys?
Yes. So on the Kickstarter, there'll be four basic Alliance troopers, three male and one female. The males all have slightly different bodies, slightly different heads, and slightly different poses. And then as part of the stretch goals, pretty much all of the stretch goals are going to be upgrades for them. So adding new arms, adding new heads, new models to the sets and things like that to give people more variety.
Yeah. So they kind of got a kind of like an articulated carapace armor, a bit like sort of modern day Roman legionary armor, I guess, yeah, in a way. But then they've got a lot of, and I like this, the way they've got kind of their packs and everything, and they're really strapped down to their legs. They look like, you know, it's made for combat so that these things don't flap around, and it looks practical.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest parts of the design brief for the Alliance, was that everything needs to look practical, even if there's no way it could be. So even the most sci-fi parts of it still need to have an element of practicality to it, which is why they all have pouches for ammo, and they've all got straps all over them, and they've all got armor that isn't overtly sci-fi, that if it was painted in modern day colors, you could believe that it was something that, you know, the US Department of Defense was working on or something like that.
I'm sure they probably are.
Yeah, they probably are.
Well, so, to be fair, I'm sure they're probably working on creating things like the Nexus as well. But
yeah.
We're probably not allowed to hear about that stuff.
No.
Well, what again, about this practicality thing, just seeing your model next to the Space Marine sort of did a lot as well, didn't it? Because you look at the Space Marine's armour next to the armour that your guys are wearing, and you just think, how the hell is a Space Marine walking around in all of that?
He's superhuman.
Yeah, designing stuff for the Icarus Project really ruined Space Marines for me, because I love Space Marines, and they were my main army for like a decade. But then once I started going down the design rabbit hole for these and went with realistic proportions and more practical armor, the Space Marines always look a little off to me now.
Yeah, well, realistic proportions just make stuff look so much better.
Yeah, it was one of the things I was going to mention, actually. That's why I brought up, again, looking at the Alliance Outrider now. You're right, it's just proportioned like a human.
Yeah. One of my favorite things about the Alliance Outrider is, canonically, that model is a woman. But there is no way for you to tell because she's wearing a helmet and the armor doesn't have molded breastplate.
Yeah. Doesn't have size double D stroke E breast on it. Yeah. It's amazing.
So that was another thing as we were going through the design process when it came to the female trooper. Right back when we were going on the artwork, I said to the artist, I was like, show her face and show that she's distinctly feminine, but I don't want any sort of sexualization in the armor because there's way too much of that in models as it is, and I want a properly armoured woman who doesn't look like she's going to get shot in a vital organ because she's missing armour plates.
Because obviously you want to look sexy on the battlefield.
It is ridiculous how all of these armoured... Like, for example, I'm sure we've all played Skyrim, and it's like how the male armour is like, you cannot hit me anywhere apart from the eyes.
And then it's full like, plate armour.
And then it's like the women armour is just
like... It takes
like,
me half an hour to go to the bathroom.
I only need to cover my breasts and my... Well,
yeah, marginally.
Arrows just don't seem to hit me.
It's always been a bugbear of mine when it comes to female soldiers, so I decided I wanted to spread the practical love and get some proper looking armor.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree, because I mean, we're looking at the Alliance Trooper now, and I mean, if you remove the head here, you could probably tell she was female because
of the way her legs are standing.
Hips are slightly coming out. Can't really see that too much because the pouch is around her waist, but she still has that kind of build to the way her hips and legs are. But yep. Not overt, like you say, not overtly so.
It's the way she's got all her armor strapped to her. She's got the massive gun that the rest of them have.
Yeah. But yeah. She doesn't have a 14-inch waist and then 38-size hips.
Exactly.
It's, as you say, normally proportioned. No, I really like that, actually. No, you've underrepresented her.
Going to get hate for that.
Yeah, there's only one picture of her, so you failed.
It could well be because the picture of her front on, I think her face was totally out of blur, out of focus, because all these scenic shots I took, and I will be the first to admit I am not great with a DSLR camera. And it took a lot longer than I am proud of to get the shots that are on the Facebook page as it is.
There's a couple of really good programs, because I've done this as well with minis, because it is an art in itself taking photographs of minis.
Yeah.
Good photographs of minis.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a really nice one, and I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but if I remember, I'll let you know, which you're able to take pictures and basically at slightly different focal lengths and then basically combine them so that the whole mini then is in focus, but you can still keep the background in blur.
That's what we need.
And it's really, really nice. And I know that I know a couple of companies use it because you get that full sharpness,
yeah,
but you get it all the way through the depth of the model, which when you're taking pictures of models, because your focal depth is so narrow, is really difficult. Yeah.
It was very, very hard to photograph the Nexus because they've got so many limbs,
yeah,
and they're all pointing in so many directions. Trying to get the faces in particular were very hard to get in anything close to focus because there's so many bits behind and in front of them.
Yeah.
But that's what makes them look so cool.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
they,
true.
They certainly do. They certainly do. You wanted to mention Gabriel Cross?
Yeah, his armor is just really, really cool.
And you have two versions, because you have Gabriel Cross with his helmet and Gabriel Cross without.
I'm a fan of the helmet, I have to say. I've always been a fan of helmets, so, of over the heads.
Yeah, you don't like painting faces.
I just think people look cooler with the helmets on.
I'm exactly the same. If I had it my way, everyone ever would always have a helmet, even in real life.
With a visor.
Yeah, always.
Well, especially in combat. I mean, I would never take my helmet off. I'd even hesitate taking my helmet off in a mess.
And we've always learnt, you know, remember Starship Troopers, yeah, never take your helmet off. Yeah.
Are you qualified to repair the...
But Gabriel holds a special place in my heart because, like I said before, the whole universe started in my first year of university when I did a creative writing course, and I decided that I was going to write new stories for the course, but all about one character, and that character was Gabriel. So I've been writing stories about Gabriel for about 7 years, and he's what...
That must feel awesome to have him as now represented.
Yeah, he was the first model that we got done, and the day that the final production models turned up, I cried. I cried like a baby, because this is something that I've been working on for years, and in my head, this isn't just a fictional character, this is a living, breathing person that I know intimate details about different parts of his life, and to see it in miniature form was just so good.
That's fantastic, honestly. That's brilliant.
But it does make it quite difficult sometimes, because I've been writing stories for the universe for so long. There's so many different little pieces of information floating around my head. Sometimes someone will ask me a really basic question, and I'll give them a lot more information than they actually wanted, because there's so many linked pieces along with that, and it just all comes out.
Oh, but the linked pieces are what matter, really, aren't they?
Yeah, the pieces that have no bearing on the gameplay, but that just make you want to take that person in your army.
They add that little extra bit of the spark.
So, one of the other things I wanted to talk about is, you don't just have the two factions, do you? And you mentioned before about the big war, and there were more than just the human and the Nexus. And I'm looking now at some concept art, and hopefully I'll say it correctly. So the Praesidian?
That's the one, Praesidians.
A Praesidian Swift. And I must admit, Praesidians, I just looked at, I was just like, I want this now.
I was going to say, it's just like shotgun arm.
Because these are they're the really cool advanced guys, aren't
they? Yes. In the background, the Praesidian are the oldest known race, and they're the ones that humanity made first contact with. So humanity traveled to Alpha Centauri, which is our closest star. When they got there, there was an unusual signal, which they followed, found a giant floating space gate, went through it, and found themselves in front of a Praesidian armada. And that's how we met aliens for the first time. But they have the best technology. They're the ones who built what in the background are called the light gates. They're, if you like, wormhole-type devices, which is how interplanetary travel is done in the background through fold space. They're the ones who built them. They're the only ones who know how they work. So if a new species gets discovered, they're the ones that decide whether they're going to get brought to the galactic stage and get a light gate and such, which is why they look so fancy and have such advanced tech.
Yeah, we're just looking at the commando now, who looks
awesome.
Lethal. So how many races do you have in your universe?
In the beta rules, which you can download for free, they'll be on the Kickstarter and they're on our website, there are six different factions. There's the Alliance of Humanity, the Nexus, the Praesidians, which are the giant blue guys, the Jatar, which look like Cthulhu, the URC, which is a army of robots. They're probably the smallest faction. And then there's the mercenaries, which are where you go if you like, if you've got models from another company that you think are really cool, you'd play as mercenaries because they're mercenaries and they've got all sorts of races.
Excellent.
And it allows us to, the mercenary faction, when we get around to it, will allow us to test new aliens and see how people respond to them without having to make a full army, because we can just put one in here and there.
That's actually a good idea, though, isn't it? Because that will bring a lot more people in if you've got... It always does, doesn't it? You don't need the model. You can have your own.
I think
own
the idea of being able to bring in your own minis is a really neat one.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm all for proxying. I mean, down the road, if we have official events where there's going to be photography done and stuff, maybe it'll be limited to only Icarus stuff so that we can get proper marketing photos and stuff. But in general, I'm a big fan of proxying. Some of the best models I ever purchased were because I proxied them in the game first, to make sure I liked how they played. So the more people want a proxy, I'm absolutely fine with it.
And the other thing you've got on your website as downloads are some little starter miniatures, the little card downloadable print and play minis, as well as all the stat cards, which is, again, a really, really neat idea, I think.
I want it to be as accessible as possible, and I realize that things like the Presidians and the Jatar, it's going to be a while before there are actual models for them because it takes a long time to make them. But I want people to be able to get a sense of what they look like on the table, and the best way to do that is print and play little standees.
Tell us about the Kickstarter a bit more then. When does it start?
It starts at noon on Friday, the 16th of September, and it will finish 2 weeks later at midnight on the 30th of September. I have to think about how many days we're in September then. Shame on me. I wanted it to be a short 2 week affair specifically to keep it on topic, because it's only a low goal. Funding a very specific thing, the two starter sets, so that we can get a bigger production run and start getting it into shops and on gaming tables. There's almost always a lull in the middle 2 weeks of a 30-day Kickstarter campaign. We had it last year with our one, and I've seen it on dozens of campaigns that I've followed over the years. So I thought, we'll take that out, do it for 2 weeks so it doesn't overstay its welcome, and people can just get in, pledge, and then it'll be finished, and hopefully fulfillment will be much quicker because it's such a focused Kickstarter.
Excellent. And I was going to mention that the, you know, what the focus is, but you just explained that it's the two starter factions, the Alliance and the Nexus to start with. And then what are your hopes for a successful Kickstarter? You get it out there. What's the plan from then on? Would you kickstart further races, or is that something you would do from the company? What are your sort of long-term goals?
It all depends on how the Kickstarter goes. So stretch goals-wise for the Kickstarter, things are going to be very simple. It's going to be upgrade kits and extra minis that have already been made, because I want people to get this stuff in their hands as soon as possible. And once you start adding brand new full sculpts, you can add up to 6 months of people waiting around to get their goodies. And I don't want that. I want people to get their models in the hand as soon as possible so they can start playing games with their toy soldiers. So all the stretch goals are going to be upgrade arms and heads and pieces like that, so that you get as much variety as possible out of the models that you're getting, and to keep fulfillment simple, because otherwise it'll be months and months and nobody wants that. People want their toy models as soon as possible.
Yeah, we want them now. Now!
Oh, definitely.
So you've actually got an estimated delivery of December. So that's a, I think, must be a record for Kickstarter.
That's fantastic. We've been waiting for like a year for some of ours.
Yeah.
We, like I said, all the sculpting and molds and masters and everything for the models in the two starter sets are done. We've already got some of the production models, but I didn't want to release them on their own because I wanted to go big with the Kickstarter. So, provided we fund, it's just a case of waiting for extra copies of those models to arrive, be boxed up and sent out. The only thing that will delay us is if we fund really big and go way over the goal, and that obviously means there's more models to produce, which will take a little bit longer. But hopefully fulfillment will be nice and quick because everything is already done and sculpted and ready to go.
Excellent. Okay. Anything more about the project that we haven't covered already? Because we've just been excited about looking at minis, so we've bound to have forgotten something.
I didn't answer one of your other questions about where we go after the Kickstarter. With the other races, depending on if the Kickstarter funds well enough, we'll use some of the money from that to start the sculpting process for probably the Chitar first, unfortunately for you, because they seem to be the more popular one. But hopefully we can get the Jatar and the Presidians together and then go back to Kickstarter to launch those two starters and the rule book and launch it as a full game. Because I don't think you can really do a full game until you've got four sets, four different factions for people to choose. There's not enough variety otherwise.
Well, you can take our money for that already, I think.
Well, yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, Cthulhu.
Yes.
He's mine.
Great. Well, thanks very much, Anto. It's been really, really good to hear about it. We're very excited about it. We were excited about it the first time round. We're just as excited about it now.
If not more so.
Seeing the minis, and yes, You have a wizard painter.
Yeah, and wizard artists and sculptors. I don't want them to feel left out, all of them.
The sculpting on these looks really, really nice. Yeah. The poses, it's really impressive, and I think people should take a look. I mean, I think even if you're not going to play the game, funding just to get the models and paint these, I think a lot of people could just be out there thinking, I just want to have these for whatever game I've got.
Yeah, whatever game you're playing, you need some sexy four-armed aliens that will tear you apart.
Definitely.
Just whatever game it is, you need them.
I wish you all the luck in the world for the Kickstarter.
Thank you.
So 16th of September, guys, that's a week from tomorrow. Get yourselves onto Kickstarter, have a look. You can look at all of the minis at the moment, Facebook, or you can go to the Icarus Miniatures homepage. All the information's there. PDFs abound, so you can download rules, you can download little minis, you can download templates and stat cards, and your printer won't know what's hit it. So go and have a look, check it out, check out the videos as well on gameplay. If you like it, get in and fund it. We certainly will be. That's another toy to try and explain to Mum when it arrives.
But we don't have it. It's just like, you know, back, like keeping your back tear as you go upstairs.
Discreet shipping is available.
Yeah, it's when you call, it's like, what have you been buying? It's not from that. Yeah. No, it's not a sex site or anything. It's miniatures. And she's like, oh, God, not those again. Okay, so we're straying into dangerous waters now, I feel. Okay, no, that's been great. Anything more from you, Oscar?
Buy it.
Yeah, help us fund this.
We want it.
Okay. No, that's great. I think that then just about wraps up this episode. My thanks to Anto and Icarus Miniatures for coming onto the show, and to all our listeners out there in the gaming world for listening to the show. If you like what we're doing, please leave us feedback on iTunes. It'd be really good to be able to broaden our scope. And also send us any comments, any queries or requests through our blog, which you can find either just on Google or also on Facebook under Man's Model Moments. We're pretty much the only thing that comes up when you Google that. So yeah, it'd be really, really good to get more feedback and also to get those reviews on iTunes and get the cast out there, even more than it is, which is good. So signing off on the Hub Systems, it's Alex.
And Oscar.
And Anto.
We'll see you next time.